Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up, it's not big and it's not clever. A clampdown on rude words at the BBC. Is this the legacy of Leslie Douglas? Also in the podcast...
Journalism needs that, the grit in the oyster, and that's what we're failing to have at the moment.
Roy Greenslade says working-class kids are being priced out of careers in the media. Plus, job cuts at The Telegraph and ITV, and The Independent takes up home at the Mail. Plus... A new crop of spandex-clad hunks joins the ranks of Sky One's second series of Gladiators. But will you be watching? It's all coming up on Media Talk from The Guardian. This week, members of the Women's Institute were asked to keep their eye out for inappropriate ads in local newspapers. My panellists this week will be making sure everything remains utterly prim and proper. Paul Robinson is a broadcasting consultant and managing director of Kidsco TV. Thanks for bringing in the homemade jam.
Great pleasure.
Paul.
Don't expect it every week.
Okay. John Plunkett is a radio correspondent for MediaGuardian.co.uk. I hope you've remembered the words to Jerusalem.
Yeah, indeed. Don't worry, I'll be doing that later in the show.
Rendition later on. Good. Now then, earmuffs at the ready, boys. Let's begin.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on Guardian.co.uk.
Yes, you may have thought there was no more to be said about Manuel Gate and the rumpus at the BBC, but the shockwaves are still resonating across the BBC's TV and radio output. This week, the corporation's director of vision, Jaina Bennett, told the media conference in Manchester to expect less swearing on the airwaves. There's to be a new taste and decency task force led by Roly Keating and Alan Yentob. Bennett said that under the new rules, she would personally have to greenlight any use of the C word. But, rude word alert, fuck and motherfucker could be left in the hands of the station controllers. This comes, of course, off the back of ITV chairman Michael Grade's recent calls for TV to be cleaned up. Paul and John, I guess we should be thankful that we're in the safe hands of cuddly bunnies Roly Keating and Alan Yentob.
Well, and also, thank goodness, Jaina Bennett's going to approve the use of the C word. I do feel I can sleep in my bed now, yes, knowing that. It's just extraordinary, isn't it? The BBC, only the BBC, could possibly have a hierarchy, yes, of offensive words and then actually allocate them to executives.
It's extraordinary. Do you think that this is the... there's a serious point here, isn't there? That it does seem to be the fallout of all that Russell Brand, Jonathan Ross affair, is that there is clearly going to be a big rethink across... particularly the BBC, but do you think that the rest of broadcasting as well about what is acceptable?
I'm sure broadcasting will follow the BBC's lead. The BBC always tends to effectively have an influence on everybody else. But I think what's interesting about this is that the first point is the words alone are not necessarily offensive. It's the context in which they're used. Mm. And you've got to take that into account, I think, absolutely. And the second thing is difference across different audiences. If you look at young audiences compared to older audiences, the tolerance is much, much different. Mm. And it does sound a little bit like a bunch of middle-aged executives sitting behind a bunch of biscuits and coffee and deciding this might be the appropriate thing to do to protect their careers. Certain licence payers will obviously support this. Others will think it's completely nonsense and mad.
And this is the point, isn't it, John, is that there's a big sort of generational thing here. And it's possible that the BBC, after years of finally getting rid of its sort of crusty old image with new youth channels, BBC Three and Radio One being very successful and all the rest of it, that it could go back the other way again.
Yeah, and I think it's changed its image quite well and quite successfully. And you don't want to get back to the sort of 1950s, 1960s attitude to it. And also I think it's important that they don't take out the bad language from films and drama, which is incredibly frustrating when you get an 18 certificate film with bleeped out, or you get famous phrases like sort of maggot farmers inserted with where there's another similar phrase beginning with yeah. M&F. But I think it's a good thing. You know, I think that you get prime people responsible for this, people like Jonathan Ross and Gordon Ramsay outside of the BBC. It presumably means that Gordon Ramsay will never, ever join the BBC. Recent allegations withstanding. And I count myself as a vaguely young demographic, and I think it's a good thing.
Well, I think you're still in the 24 to 35 age group.
It's very nice of you to say, Matt. Yeah.
But no, I think that Paul, there is a feeling that perhaps broadcasting types in metropolitan areas had got rather ahead of where most people were.
I think that's probably true, but there's a real risk, I think, that one individual who's clearly gone over the line changes...
Could spoil it for everybody,
a simple way of putting it. And look, I think you could argue that maybe Jonathan did need reining in, but probably he needed reining in 9 months ago. It just happens he's got caught in rather a big way. So I think you've got to be careful not to overplay this. I think this is the BBC being seen to be a public service broadcaster, being seen to be accountable, right, and being seen to do the right thing.
And I'm perhaps just applying, being... restating the rules probably as they exist already.
I remember when I was at the BBC 12 years ago, we had similar lists of what was acceptable and what wasn't, and certain times you could use them.
Right. John, the other main development in this story this week is that Leslie Douglas has got a new job. Didn't take her very long.
That's right, yes, with indecent haste. she's joining Universal Music next month. And she'll be responsible for marketing and also for expanding their TV division, which so far, launched 2 years ago, has done music specials with, not surprisingly, Universal artists.
Right.
But they're looking to expand into drama and comedy. It'll be really interesting to find out how she does. And she'll also be reunited with lots of people who gave her gold discs of her sterling work at Radio 2, no doubt.
Right, absolutely. Paul, one of the things that came out since Media Talk last... The last edition of Media Talk was the emails and all the details really about the lack of compliance at Radio 2. And one thing that I had found when the reaction of a lot of people at BBC Radio was how it was terrible that such a talented person as Leslie Douglas had been lost to the nation and it was so awful. But when you started actually reading what had happened and really the astonishing lack of any kind of control, managerial control at any level at Radio 2, you start to think, actually, it was probably right that she went, wasn't it?
Well, yes, I was surprised when I saw that. I've known Leslie about 20 years, and she is a very good executive. She's hardworking, she's diligent, she cares passionately about the BBC, and she cares about Radio 2. But absolutely, I mean, for that BlackBerry message to be sent, you know, so cavalier, in such a cavalier way, yes, it's fine. Major blunder by her. I mean, she's absolutely drilled into that and questioned what it was about. I suspect it's a classic example of someone, A, having got a little bit lazy, a little bit complacent, but also being busy, get this off my desk, it looks fine, it's okay, it's 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, no one's going to notice, it'll be okay.
Well, what did you make of the details of it, Paul? Because the producer of the programme, this guy, Nick Phillips, young guy, worked for Russell Brand's production company, he was obviously on the side of Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross. He said it was very funny and that the call should probably be left in. He did, however, I thought, do the right thing in that, although that was the angle he took, he did raise it and he absolutely put his finger on what he thought was the troublesome part of the broadcast. What I thought was problematic was that then every other stage, nobody questioned him and nobody seemed to take the opposite view and thought, well, actually, is he right?
Yes, I was very impressed by what Nick did. I think you're totally right. He identified the issues. He actually passed it up to senior management and said, this is what I think, but what do you think? Mm. And asked them to sign off or otherwise.
Because it's perfectly all right for the producer to take the side of the
totally
town. That's
fine.
His job, isn't it?
Unless, of course, he decides to go ahead and doesn't refer it up, in which case he would absolutely be wrong to do so. But he said, this is my point of view. I'm taking the side of the talent, but I think you should look at this. The failure is with management, who failed to ask him the appropriate questions or failed to challenge him. And they absolutely should have done.
Because if you're an editor or an executive, if somebody comes to you... and they're referring something up to you, it is your job as the executive to question, to take the opposite view, isn't it?
Absolutely. When I was head of programmes at Radio 1, I would do exactly that. Mm. You know, I'd get something a particular DJ has done and I would look at it and I'd listen to it. And I'd actually say, if I haven't got time to make a decision now, don't do it. You know, always take the cautious route. If you can't physically get the transcript or you can't listen to it, you've got to say, no, please don't go ahead, take it out. You've got to take that view.
Briefly, any word yet on a successor to Leslie Douglas? Do we know what the process is? Has it started even?
I think they weren't going to start. They certainly haven't advertised it yet, and they said they weren't going to start in earnest until after the BBC Trust report. But it has been said, not from the man himself, that Bob Shannon perhaps has distanced himself possibly from the role and doesn't see himself in a music job. Right. I've not heard that from Bob, which means that Andy Parfitt perhaps becomes a stronger contender, and he's certainly a very, very safe pair of hands from the last 10 years at the BBC Radio 1. Yeah. Or they could do what they did with Jim Moyer years ago, which is going to TV, because Jim came from Light Entertainment, but... possibly unlikely.
Paul, any inside gossip, track gossip on who might replace
him? It's scarily quiet. Yeah. I think it's almost certainly an inside BBC person. I cannot see anyone from outside getting it, although there are some commercial radio people who are actually putting their hats into the ring, or at least declaring their interest.
Yeah.
But I go with John. I think Andy Parfitt will be my top choice. You don't want to lose Andy from the BBC, but Andy is now 50. He can't really be running Radio 1 anymore.
No, all right. Thanks very much for now. Let us know what you think, particularly on the rude words aspect of this story. Post your eulogy, limericks, or comments on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. Just keeping clean. I'm Matt Wells, this is Media Talk, still ahead on this week's podcast.
To be honest, I'm in total shock at the moment. Once it settles down, I'm sure I'll think more about it in the morning, and it will absolutely confirm this is what I want to do, yeah.
We hear from this year's Media Guardian Student Journalist of the Year. And can an even newer bunch of gladiators liven up a dying franchise? Gareth McLean will be filling us in. But first, time to catch up on some of the other media stories from the past 7 days and news at the end of the week, John, that the independent offices, or the journalists, are going to be moving into the offices of the Daily Mail. It'll be an interesting culture clash to watch.
It will be. It'll be fascinating, yeah. Certainly the shops are going to be a lot better for the people at the Independent.
That's right, because at the moment they're stuck out somewhere, not even in Canary Wharf.
There's several
further stops along the Docklands Light Railway.
How they're going to miss the DLR. That's right, yes.
but there's clearly a financial aspect behind all of this.
And there will be sharing of not entirely clear what yet, but sort of backroom services. We don't know if that extends
just
from
security.
Back office functions.
What are they?
No, what you're
Please, Paul Dacre is blanching, yes. Well, I mean, it could be anything from security, I guess. It could be sharing of at a very basic level. It could be sharing the same lifts. Or it could be more extensive and more interesting, perhaps, if they're using libraries or secretarial staff, admin staff. So it remains to be seen.
Yeah.
At what point do you become sister titles?
Well, quite, yes, absolutely. Well, the Independent has denied that there's any move by Associated to take over the titles, but you never know what might happen when they've all been there and sitting together for a few months. Perhaps they'll decide that they get on marvellously anyway.
That's right, one of the less likely unions, yes.
Absolutely. And John, the decision by Channel 4 to pull out of digital radio has reverberation still.
Yeah, it still rumbles on, yes. It was October the 10th when Andy Duncan announced his intention to quit the 4 Digital venture, which was going to launch the second sort of generation, as it were, of national DAB radio stations. But Channel 4 are yet to agree an exit with the other shareholders, four or five other shareholders in the group, about exactly how they do that. And there is money involved because they raised about £3 million between them. And there are still about £1 million unspent. I mean, it's very unlikely, of course, that the Multiplex or any of those stations will ever see the light of day.
Spending it on anything.
That's right. Don't spend it on DAB radios, possibly. but yes, it remains to be seen how that actually works out.
All right, then. Thanks for that. And now, finally, in this section, it was such a packed show last week that we couldn't squeeze in the story about a survey that said commercial TV audiences were up 5% on last year. Media Talks producer Ben Green spoke to Tess Alps, the chief executive of Thinkbox. That's the group that carried out the survey. Now, Thinkbox is the body that promotes advertising on commercial television, so they were hardly going to come out with a survey that said anything else, I guess. But Ben asked Tess whether the findings are actually more a matter of quantity over quality.
Absolutely not. I think we all know that television is more enjoyable these days for people because they can control it more, there's more choice, people get to see more of what they really love. They wouldn't be doing it, they wouldn't be watching more if they didn't love it. I guess there are so many other choices out there, so I don't think we should see that at all.
There is indeed a recession on at the moment. People keep telling us to prepare for doom and gloom.
Every media organisation is going to have tough times, and TV will not be immune from that. But I think we feel and have seen so far that although TV revenue gets talked about maybe more than other media, actually we've done slightly better than most other media, with the exception perhaps of internet search. TV will be more robust because it's a proven medium, and in a recession, people go to proven safe havens of advertising. They're not going to waste money experimenting with things that they don't know pay back.
Tess Alps, the chief executive of Thinkbox. So, Paul, commercial television audiences up 5%. Well, I guess with more and more stations, it's not massively surprising. The question is whether advertising revenues will stay as robust as the TV ratings.
Well, the interesting thing about ratings going up, of course, that tends to drive prices down because actually, it means that they can't increase their prices overall per unit. Mm. So, in that sense, it doesn't necessarily mean there's more money involved. I think what is interesting, though, is this idea, which is sort of tracking what's happening in the States at the moment, which is that as you get a tougher market and advertising budgets become more scrutinised, people do tend to go for places where they can get mass audiences in one go rather than going for fragmented players and maybe being smarter with their buying. So ITV1 particularly, obviously still being the one place where you can hit a lot of people very quickly, 10 million people on X Factor, it becomes more attractive in a recession.
Okay, not all doom and gloom in the media industry then. Well, if you've got anything to say on these stories, leave your thoughts on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk, or do post a comment on our Facebook wall. It was the 30th annual Guardian Student Media Awards this week. The evening at the achingly swanky Shoreditch Town Hall was hosted by T4's Rick Edwards. No, I'd never heard of him either. And it was the usual contradictory. Apparently we booked George Lamb, but he pulled out.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, no.
But I'm not sure if it was a result of an internet campaign.
Right. I'm sure he'd have been very good.
I'm sure he would have been. It was the usual contradictory mix of smartly dressed students, free booze, dodgy canapes, and Alan Rusbridger. Previous winners of these prestigious gongs included Jonathan Friedland, Mark Frith, and Andrew Rawnsley. And this year's crop were a pretty impressive bunch, too. We'll hear from the evening's big winner in a mo. Earlier in the day, students heard from prominent journalists at the Guardian Student Media Conference, where Media Guardian blogger and City University's Professor of Journalism, Roy Greenslade, said the profession had become a closed door to working-class hopefuls.
I'm totally worried about the lack of breadth of intake. I know people go on about there being no class division, but working-class men and women came into this profession 25 years ago, and they're not enabled to do so now because newspapers and magazines, particularly magazines, expect journalists to come and do work experience or internships for little money or indeed no money. I've even heard of one case on one famous magazine run by Condé Nast, a rich company, in which an intern worked for 6 months on no pay. It means that only the children of the wealthy can really afford to move into that kind of journalism, especially in the metropolis. And I think it means that what we're doing is, OK, we're getting a very high-grade intake of people who've been through university, paid for again, of course, by their parents. But what we're not doing is getting that intake that I like so much of the really driven, ambitious person who I think is lacking the opportunities to be able to get their feet under the desk. I mean, it worries me that papers will look at the qualifications of people applying for work experience and then select them on that basis rather than perhaps taking a risk on somebody who doesn't have such qualifications and who certainly comes from what we might call the classes below the middle.
And what are the consequences for journalism of that?
As far as I'm concerned, the best journalists are those who are driven, determined, who have more perspiration sometimes than inspiration. And I think that comes, as it did in the past anyway, from working class boys and girls who really want to make something of themselves, and in so doing are going to be more aggressive, more determined, more ambitious. And I think journalism needs that. It needs the grit in the oyster, and that's what we're failing to have at the moment.
Grit in the oyster in this podcast is obviously John Plunkett. You're a Barrow boy made good, aren't you?
Thanks, mate, very much so, yeah. A colleague of mine was talking to students a while ago, a student journalist, a wannabe journalist, saying, how many of you have got a blog? And only two or three hands went up, and she was in despair and suggested that if you want to get into the industry, that's a really obvious way to do it. Whereas in my day, great first time I've used that phrase, it would have been a cuttings book full of proof that you'd work for free at local newspapers.
Well, Paul, we've had announcements this week from The Telegraph about more redundancies, Trinity Mirror, Time Out as well. ITV say they're going to make more cuts. I mean, at a time of economic downturn, it becomes very difficult to get a foothold in the industry because all those routes in, whether they were training courses or paid internships, all that sort of thing is the first thing to get cut, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Roy's right in the sense that if you can't afford to support yourself, you clearly can't afford to do a journalism course, and that will clearly have an impact on the intake. And clearly also, part-time jobs that people might have used in the past to support their studies, are drying up. It's becoming harder and harder. I think where I'd take issue with Roy Greenslade, and I must declare an interest in that my eldest son is taught by Roy Greenslade,
right.
And that is, I don't necessarily think that only the working class can be driven and ambitious and really going for it. I think anyone can do that.
Yeah.
It just means that people who haven't got money maybe can't afford to do the courses.
All right, let's inject a bit of optimism. Now, after the Student Media Awards ceremony, producer Ben, who was looking particularly studenty, caught up with the night's shining star.
I'm Tom Roberts. I'm the ex-editor of Felix, the student newspaper of Imperial College London. I've been given Student Newspaper of the Year and, bizarrely enough, Student Journalist of the Year. And I'm over the moon, to be honest, absolutely ecstatic.
I spoke to some of your colleagues earlier. They said that your life has been purely the newspaper for the past 12 months at least. Tell us what you've been up to.
It was. I think that makes reference to the hellish Wednesday nights that we have sometimes, where it usually requires the editor to stay up pretty much 24/7 for that day to push it out. But yeah, we've been covering student politics, breaking news around campus. We've been covering wider issues, national issues, say to do with bursaries, student loans, drugs, things like that. Basically all the issues that affect students and the ones that we think they'll be interested in reading about on a weekly basis.
And you're following in some fairly famous footsteps here with this award. This is definitely what you want to do.
I think so now, yeah. This is certainly confirmation of that, yeah. To be honest, I'm in total shock at the moment. So once it settles down, I'm sure I'll think more about it in the morning. And it will absolutely confirm this is what I want to do, yeah, yeah.
Tom Roberts there, and congratulations to all of this year's winners. Remember, where your talent doesn't take you, nepotism will, probably. Gareth McLean is next. Yes, our TV writer and moustache correspondent has joined us in the pod. That was a very nice picture in The Guardian this week.
Oh, thank you very much.
Centrefold.
Why, yes. First time I've been in Centrefold in The Guardian.
Absolutely.
Other magazines
are available.
Denying all knowledge. Yes.
Now, listen.
And next week, of course, I'll be wearing my... Because I am one of the new gladiators. Just so you're aware.
Yes. Now, they're a desperate attempt to revive this flagging show, isn't it? They've brought in a whole new lot of them.
Oh, well, indeed they have. And they're called funny things. I don't know, like... Teaser and stuff. I mean.
but
as Richard Wolff wings his way to five, they're ploughing on with gladiators. Mm, which, yeah, but, you know, is fine.
But I don't, what do you think that Sky One needs to do and to be under whoever takes over from
well, with
him?
All that lycra, it probably needs some canister at this stage.
Probably. All right. Well, listen, I think it's Gordon Ramsay's wife that you owe an apology to, actually, after those revelations. I've seen that picture.
I don't like them. They give me a sore head.
I've seen that picture on your Facebook page.
Oh yes,
with you and your arms around Gordon Ramsay. It's all your fault.
It's all my fault.
Breakdown of his marriage.
Yes.
Allegedly.
You can see. I was trying to say. You can see both my hands. It's his hand. It's only one of his hands. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, it should be an interesting cook-along live tonight.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll mention it. Do you think they will, or will it be just one of those things that sort of nobody mentions? You know, like at Christmas when you go home and nobody mentions some things about you.
Well, it'd be interesting. There's two reasons to watch cook-along live to see whether
to learn to cook.
No,
that's three then, right?
Well, to see whether they mentioned the News of the World story, and then
I'm guessing not.
And but then to count how many times he swears.
Yes,
because this is a very important story. That's
there is a very important story.
Have you got this?
Someone it says here in that seamless link, someone has done a report about something about swear words.
Yeah.
And just what's rude and what isn't.
So if you've got your list there,
I do. They fall into two religious words,
right? Yes,
including bastard god, which I've never heard of as a phrase.
No, see what you've got there is the Ofcom research, which actually was published a few months ago. But there's no such thing as an old story.
Oh, I see. Right, okay.
And then we've revived it, and now apparently arse. But under the headline, body parts stroke body functions, because they have, Ofcom have been very careful and helpful. And
they have.
And they've put everything...
Are you going to mention?
Yes. I'm not sure we can mention any of these other words.
No, I'm not.
I'm just going to go and look at the whole... Oh, there's
funnily enough, on the list of offensive words, there aren't the most offensive words.
What's that?
Starring Julie Graham.
Poor Julie Graham.
Oh,
what would she say
now? Have you been watching Survivors?
Funny enough, no.
Hey, there we are then. I rest my case.
Yes.
What a load off, let me just find a word.
I don't think you can say any of these
balls?
Words. No, yeah, maybe that, yes.
Maybe that.
what a load of bonk, yes, that would be all right.
What a load of drama from BBC World.
Yes. That's it. Talking of which, the Christmas schedules are out.
Yes, they are. And, well, the highlights I saw, thought of, were the new royal family, which... We're very excited.
Right.
Well,
is it just yet another Christmas special?
Yet, and don't say it like that. Yet another.
You know, can all these people just go through lives? You know, they can't bother to do a new series.
Why?
There's a whole load of stuff that's in the Christmas schedules that's just on at Christmas.
What's more annoying is Channel 4, because they do their Alan Carr's Christmas Celebrity Ding Dong and Russell Brand's Ponderland Christmas and such a thing. Blah. Those are more annoying than the things that are just on.
Why are they more annoying? Because they're on the whole the rest of the time.
Yes,
well.
Exactly. They don't feel special. They're not like Christmas specials.
Just
because they're on the rest of the year.
Oh, I see. Right, I'm with you. Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to Doctor Who. Yes. Well, sort of. I hope it's about something this year. Also, what have I been watching? Oh, I've watched Wallander that's on Sunday.
And now is he Swedish or Norwegian? I can never quite remember.
Swedish.
Apparently, the books are awful.
Are they? Oh, I've heard a lot of people quite like them.
But the
it looks great, and there's a lovely theme tune. Well, I was watching it, going, is this good or just kind of terrible? So I'm veering.
Well, that's not good. I think you'll have to watch it again to decide.
Oh God, it's like 90 minutes long.
Anyway, this is the thing with now. What's his name? Who I can't remember. He's the posh actor, isn't he?
Kenneth Branagh.
Thank you very much, Sean Plunkett. Kenneth Branagh.
Well, you are a barrow boy made good, if you know about the theatre.
I'm seeing him tonight.
So, you're not really working class at all, are you?
Is he any good?
Well, he's all right, but he's the only one that seems to be allowed to do any acting. Everyone else just has to look exasperated beside him.
I was going to say, what do the rest of them do?
They just all go, and say things like, you mean to say that there's a serial killer on their loose and he may be targeting blah de blah? And you're like, that line was added later when they got a note.
They do the expositional dialogue. Presumably.
They do indeed.
Okay, thank
much
you.
Much like yourself.
much like that line.
Yes. This is expositional dialogue.
Okay, is that it?
I know, I would just like so. To say, I hope you've mentioned Simon Heffer's flame mail to this Telegraph.
We haven't. Could you mention it, please?
Oh, of course. Well, Simon Heffer, famed for his irate pedantry, has sent an email out to the Telegraph staff.
What does it say?
Saying that let me get this right, because I am working class. Our readers have Christmas lunch, not Christmas dinner.
Do they really?
This is not the Daily Star.
where do you stand on that, Paul?
Oh, I totally agree.
Absolutely. Well, this is obviously an upper-class podcast.
It clearly is. And God bless Simon Heffer. It's that kind of irate pedantry sort of makes me really horny.
Well, I think quite on that note, we'd best
call me Simon. Call me anytime.
Break for lunch, I think. Right, thank you very much to Gareth McLean and also to John Plungett and Paul Robinson. Remember, if you want to give us some feedback, head to the Facebook group or follow the official channels at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. Mediatalk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells, and there'll be more next week. Bye for now.